Bin Laden is dead and Al-Qaeda is degraded in Iraq and Afghanistan. And it's time to end the forever war.
The longest U.S. war draws to a close. It's Friday, April 16th. This is VOA Asia. I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. We're online. You can find us at VOA Asia Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, and YouTube. Also ahead, aid for Myanmar's embattled, Japan and the United States confer, a robot virus killer, and coffee. It's all on today's VOA Asia. U.S. President Joe Biden announced his plan to withdraw all 2,500 American troops from Afghanistan by September 11th, months later than the May 1st deadline that the Trump administration and the Taliban agreed on last year. White House correspondent Patsy Whitaker-Swara has this report.
After 20 years, close to $1 trillion, more than 2,300 American deaths, and the loss of tens of thousands of Afghan lives, the U.S. is saying enough.
We went to war with clear goals. We achieved those objectives. Bin Laden is dead, and Al-Qaeda is degraded in Iraq and Afghanistan. And it's time to end the forever war.
On Wednesday, President Joe Biden announced that all 2,500 American troops will withdraw from Afghanistan by September 11th, 2 decades after the U.S. invaded the country following attacks by the terrorist group Al-Qaeda, who sought haven there. The Trump administration had previously set May 1st as the withdrawal deadline, providing that the Taliban, the Muslim fundamentalist group controlling Afghanistan, cut ties with Al-Qaeda. Biden set his withdrawal without conditions, arguing there is no point to continue to fight an intractable war and expect different results. Some Republicans say the Taliban will regain control and hurt Afghan and U.S. interests.
President Biden, unfortunately, has chosen the highest risk option available, which is to leave no matter what.
In coordination with the U.S., NATO on Wednesday announced withdrawal of 10,000 of its forces from Afghanistan by May 1st.
Any Taliban attacks on our troops during this period will be met with a forceful response.
Biden said the U.S. and its allies will continue training and equipping almost 300,000 Afghan troops, support humanitarian efforts, and engage diplomatically.
We will support peace talks between the government of Afghanistan and the Taliban facilitated by the United Nations, and will continue to support the rights of Afghan women and girls.
In response to Biden's decision to pull troops in September instead of May, the Taliban issued a warning, increasing fears of violence and the collapse of the Afghan government.
There's probably no option that significantly reduces the level of violence. There's also probably no option on the table to build the Afghanistan that the United States probably had in mind when they invested more than $1 trillion in the war. And so, yes, this is probably the best of a series of bad options.
The Afghan Peace Council, a body created to negotiate with the Taliban, is set to meet in Turkey later this month, but peace prospects are dim. Following his remarks, Biden visited Arlington National Cemetery to pay respects to soldiers who lost their lives in the war. Patsy Whitaker-Swara, VOA News.
These are among some of the top Asia headlines you'll find right now when you visit voanews.com. Blinken makes surprise visit to Afghanistan to sell Biden troop withdrawal. South Korea considers actions against Japan over plan to release radioactive water from Fukushima plant. Japanese Prime Minister faces tough balancing act between U.S. and China. Chinese and U.S. military exercises are now new norm in disputed Asian Sea. Colorful coffins lighten mood at New Zealand funerals. Expanded coverage of these stories and more can be found daily on Facebook at VOA Asia. Also join us at our website, voanews.com. I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. Let's continue with VOA Asia. The Free Burma Rangers, a multi-ethnic humanitarian group that has aided oppressed ethnic groups mainly in Myanmar and reported on the conflicts for more than 25 years, has increased aid in the border regions of Karen State, site of recent airstrikes by the Myanmar Army. The group has worked in other countries including Sudan, Syria, Iraq, and Kurdistan. From Thailand, Steve Sanford has more.
In Myanmar's Karen State, thousands of internally displaced people, or IDPs, are desperately seeking food, shelter, and medical aid. following increased government attacks in recent weeks, including airstrikes. For David Eubank and the Free Burma Rangers, where more than 30 teams are currently in Karen State, the challenges are daunting.
And so our teams move to where the fighting is, and right now our teams are with every displaced group, giving medical care, helping people who are wounded or sick, also coordinating to bring food in, bringing tarps for shelter because people are hiding in the jungle, and then telling their stories and trying to get the news out so people in the world know what's happening.
Many of the members of the FBR are ethnic Karen, including the group's deputy director, K-Posse, known by his nickname, Monkey. A former resistance fighter in the Karen area of Myanmar, K-Posse has seen much pain and suffering over the years in his war-torn homeland. Now he helps document human rights abuses, taking photos and videos with the aim of helping friends and relatives who remain in the country.
Right now, the villagers are in trouble. Our FBR medic teams are working to rescue them from the violence. At the same time, our families, wives, and kids have to run and hide in the jungle and the caves.
It's a traumatic experience for the internally displaced persons, many of whom have faced repeated upheaval in the past, in a conflict that's lasted more than 7 decades. But one of the most damning developments, according to Eubank, is a new method of air attacks being used by Myanmar forces.
In over 25 years of working in Karen State, I've never seen a bombing. And now we have them every day. The other surprising thing is the indiscriminate nature of their bombing, killing civilians, mostly civilians who are killed. But that's exactly what they're doing in Rangoon and the other cities. They're killing civilians, kids, women, it doesn't matter. So it's the same, it's just what weapon they can use.
As the crisis in Myanmar shows no signs of letting up, humanitarian groups both within the country and abroad are expected to increase relief efforts for all civilians. Steve Sanford for VOA News, Chiang Mai, Thailand.
Happening now in Asia, U.S. Secretary of State Antony Blinken made an unannounced visit to Kabul Thursday to sell Afghan leaders and a wary public on President Joe Biden's decision to withdraw all American troops from the country in September. Stay up to date with VOA. You're listening to VOA Asia. We've made it through another week. Nice to have you along with us on VOA Asia. When Japan's Prime Minister visits the White House later today, China is likely to be high on the agenda. U.S. officials hope the visit demonstrates a greater willingness for the alliance to counter Beijing. For Tokyo, though, it's a careful balancing act, as VOA's Bill Gallo tells us from Seoul, South Korea.
Under Prime Minister Yoshihide Suga, Japan has taken a more critical stance toward China, speaking out against Beijing's mass internment of Uyghur Muslims, its move to crush democracy in Hong Kong, and its aggressive stance in the disputed East and South China Seas. Japan has also participated in high-profile meetings of the Quad, a regional coalition that also includes the U.S., India, and Australia, that the U.S. hopes will counter China. For Japan, it's a recalibration of its relationship with China. However, Tokyo won't let relations suffer too greatly, warns James Brown of Temple University.
I think overall Japan is not comfortable with this. I think it's deeply uncomfortable with being urged to take a stronger stance. They recognize that China, both economically, militarily, has a lot of ways, a lot of leverage that they can use to make things very uncomfortable for Japan.
Earlier this month, China sent a naval strike group near Okinawa, where the U.S. has troops. It was a powerful signal Beijing is prepared to counter the U.S.-Japan alliance. China has also issued stark warnings about Suga's upcoming visit, saying Japan should not become involved in U.S.-China tensions. However, Japan's new approach is encouraging to many U.S. lawmakers, who have become increasingly hawkish on China. Senator Bill Hagerty, who until 2019 was ambassador to Japan, says he believes U.S. allies are beginning to see the threat posed by China.
I think what's happening is the rest of Asia is seeing this. I think the rest of Asia is going to be drawn toward our model. That's my hope. I want to see us bring them all into the fold and demonstrate that our democratic values and that our free market principles are the best possible posture to undertake.
For Suga, it's a difficult position. how to embrace an open and free Indo-Pacific without openly antagonizing Beijing. Bill Gallo, VOA News, Seoul, South Korea.
VOA Asia is on Twitter. Follow us at VOA Asia for developing stories in Asia, perhaps close to you. Our Twitter feed also has updates on programs you can hear and see with links to find them easily. With VOA Asia, you can also follow radio program host VOA Stevenson and VOA Melman. VOA Asia Twitter. We're always online for you.
This is VOA Asia. When Americans think of coffee culture, they often think of Seattle, home of Starbucks. But some say New York City may have a better claim as the U.S. center of coffee culture. Nina Veshneva examined that part of the city's history in this story, narrated by Anna Rice.
As an any large metropolis, mornings in New York City start like this.
Small coffee and one bagel, please.
They come to work rain or shine and are always welcomed by busy New Yorkers, the food cart vendors. $2 will buy you a breakfast. Another popular morning destination is the deli, short for delicatessen, usually a small store that has everything one might need, a small snack selection, some hot food, and the obligatory coffee to go.
We've had a lot of famous people come in. All these people have come in. Sylvester Stallone and Howard Stern is a customer, but he doesn't drink the coffee.
Coffee first came to New York in the early 1600s, back when the city was called New Amsterdam by its Dutch founders.
New York City was really the coffee capital of North America. And the coffee culture of New York City is very distinct because it was a Dutch colony.
By the 1800s, stores would sell steaming hot cups of coffee for a few cents. Local rumors and news came for free. Once paper cups made their entrance, coffee to go became a morning routine.
We provide us an excellent cup of freshly roasted coffee every single day for 100 years.
Alexandra Vassilaris is the owner of a coffee empire. For three generations, her company has been giving New Yorkers what they need most in the mornings. Since the 1960s, many New York coffee shop owners have been immigrants from Greece. So it's not accidental that one of the most recognizable coffee cup symbols here is an amphora. Like yellow taxicabs, they were a symbol for coffee to go. But then Starbucks came along.
Starbucks has done a very good job of creating a roast profile and roasting notably darker, for example, than many other roasters. And for many years, this was their sole point of differentiation. They had quality coffees, and they roasted them very dark, and their consumers started to become educated to actually appreciate that.
For those New Yorkers who prefer to sip their coffee in a less hurried manner, there is Café Reggio. Walls are adorned with Caravaggio-style paintings. Benches are decorated with the Medici family ciphers. And the coffee machine here is the oldest in New York.
At this time, it should be, you know, packed with the line inside, outside.
Café Reggio owner Fabrizio Cavallacci has been here for the last 50 years. And so were his parents before he took the helm. Coffee is still made based on traditional Italian recipes. In a classical interior or rushing out of a deli, a cup of coffee remains an integral part of New York City life. For Nina Vishnova in New York, Anna Rice, VOA News.
That's our program for today and for this week. Join us again Monday at the same time for VOA Asia. In the meantime, we're online anytime you'd like to visit. We're at Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, and YouTube. Just look us up under VOA Asia. We also thank our team that brings you this program, Managing Editor Diane Gao, Ira Melman, Doug Bernard, Keith Lane, and Amy Hybels. I'm Jim Stevenson. We're in Washington. We hope you have a wonderful day ahead. Be safe. Be well.